Our next presentation is entitled Cogan Grass Invasion in a Longleaf Pine Ecosystem, Pre- and Post-Eradication Impacts on Soil Nutrient Cycling Processes. The authors are Donald Hagen, Shabu Jose, and Kimberly Bone. And Mr. Donald Hagen will be giving the presentation.
Can you guys hear me all right back there? Well, thank you for the introduction. Again, my name is Don Hagen. I'm a PhD candidate in the School of Forest Resources and Conservation at the University of Florida in Gainesville. And this is just a little bit of my dissertation research on the effects of Cogan grass, both invasion and eradication on soil nutrient cycling processes. Before I get started, I do want to acknowledge some of my collaborators. First would be my advisor, Shabu Jose, who's now at the University of Missouri, and also Kimberly Bone and Francisco Escobedo, who are two of my committee members there at the University of Florida. Just a little background information on Cogan grass before we get started. Cogan grass is a C4 rhizomatous invasive grass. It's native to Southeast Asia, tropical and subtropical species. It's invasive on 6 continents, so it's a problem all over the world. And by one estimate, we have up to 500 million hectares of Cogan grass worldwide. So just to put that in perspective, that's about 7 times, if you lumped all that together, that's about 7 times the area of the state of Texas, or about half the area of the United States. So a tremendous amount of Cogan grass worldwide. It's a growing problem here in the U.S. We've got about 600,000 hectares scattered across 9 states, mostly in the southeastern U.S., mostly actually in Florida, Mississippi, and Alabama. And you'll commonly see Cogan grass referred to as the 7th worst weed in the world. Here's a couple pictures just to give you an idea of what Cogan grass looks like. You've got this off-center white midrib, kind of this lime green color. And you can see the overall growth habit of it there, these sharp, pointy rhizomes that are characteristic. But to really get a feel for what Cogan grass is and what it does, you really need to see an invasion. And this would be a typical invasion, what you might see in central Florida, that's where I took this picture, or in South Alabama, where it's really bad. Cogan grass really prefers disturbed sites, so you'll see it a lot in old agricultural fields, abandoned fields like this, roadside right-of-ways, old mines, plantation forests, places like that. You get an idea of just the tremendous amount of biomass that it produces. Some estimates say up to 40 tons of fresh weight per acre, or per hectare, I should say. And as dense as it is above ground, the majority of that biomass is actually below ground in that dense root and rhizome mat. So like I said, Cogan grass, it does seem to prefer these disturbed sites, but more and more we are starting to see it in relatively undisturbed natural areas. Particularly these open canopied pine ecosystems that are characteristic of the southeastern coastal plain. This is a longleaf pine sandhill in central Florida, and as you can see, it's thoroughly infested with Cogan grass. Obviously, when you're dealing with a Cogan grass invasion in a natural area, that presents a whole new set of challenges. For one, your control options might be more limited than they would be in some abandoned site. And two, you're probably faced not only with the task of controlling it, but if you're a land manager, you probably also want to restore that diverse assemblage of native species that were displaced by the Cogan grass. And obviously, to do that, that would require some knowledge of soil properties. So that brings me to my 3 questions for this research study. One was, how does Cogan grass invasion affect soil properties, particularly nitrogen and phosphorus and associated properties like pH, organic matter? Number 2, and maybe more importantly from a restoration standpoint, is do novel soil properties persist following eradication? And this is an area where really there hasn't been a whole lot of research with any invasive species, particularly Cogan grass. And finally, how do these changes affect the reestablishment and the performance of a desirable native species? Today I'm primarily going to focus on 1 and 2. I'm still kind of working on my data for number 3. I've just got a little bit of preliminary data that I'll share with you there. So here's my study site. This is Withlacoochee State Forest. It's the Croom Tract of Withlacoochee State Forest. It's in central Florida, about 60 miles north-northeast of Tampa. And this site, it's got some of the finest examples of old growth and really mature second growth longleaf sandhill that you'll see anywhere. And just beautiful big trees, diverse understory, just a beautiful place. But it also has the unfortunate distinction of being immediately adjacent to one of the sites where Kogan grass was introduced back in the 1940s. They actually share a pretty large boundary over here on the west side. So this particular site, this particular tract, has been dealing with Kogan grass invasion into natural areas for decades, probably since the 1950s, if not earlier. So I think as Kogan grass, you know, we start to see more and more Kogan grass invasion into natural areas in the southeast, we can really learn a lot from places like this that have been dealing with it for a long time. And just to give you an idea of the magnitude of the problem, each one of those dots that you see represents a site that's either currently invaded by Kogan grass or is in some state of recovery following chemical treatment. Brings me to my experimental design. I'll just go over this real quickly. Basically, I'm just taking advantage of the fact that I have native reference communities that are uninvaded. I have invaded sites, and I have sites that are in various stages of recovery. I took advantage of these sites and set up a chrono sequence that I hope would help me tease out the effects of invasion and also those post-eradication effects. So I've got reference sites, invaded sites, and then sites where Kogan grass was eradicated 3 years ago, 5 years ago, and 7 years ago. Basically, I'm interested in how it affects the potentially available pools of nitrogen and phosphorus. So for that, I've got multiple replicates across each of these treatments. I just measured total Kaldol nitrogen and Malek-1 phosphorus in all those soils. Also, I was curious about how it affects the actual availability of the various forms of nitrogen and phosphorus during the growing season. So I used an in situ resin bag approach during the growing season. And I measured pH and organic matter. And I also brought some soils back to the greenhouse from each of these treatments and grew various native plants in them just to assess the effects of these various treatments on plant performance. We'll get into the results a little bit. We'll just start with soil organic matter. Soil organic matter is important for both cycling of nitrogen and phosphorus in these systems. And it's highly variable, and in my case, we saw no treatment effects for soil organic matter. You might see a little bit of a trend, but there was no effect of invasion, nor did we see any post-eradication patterns developing. Soil pH, on the other hand, we did see some patterns. And there have been some studies that have looked at Kogan grass invasion on soil properties, pH being one of them. And I believe all of them have reported that they've reported a decrease in soil pH associated with Kogan grass invasion. And in our case, we also saw a decrease, but it was not statistically significant. But what we did see, however, is this significant spike in pH following eradication. So 5 years after eradication, you see pH go from about 5.2 to about 5.7. So it's a half-point increase in pH in 5 years. And then it declines back pretty close to reference levels by 7 years. Now, pH, just like organic matter, is tied to a lot of nutrient cycling processes for both nitrogen and phosphorus. And as we'll see in these next few slides, it could be associated with some differences that I saw. Here's soil nitrogen. These systems for most species are nitrogen limited. And a colleague of mine, Pedram Danishgar, looked at the effects of Kogan grass he looked at the competitive ability of Kogan grass in these systems and found that it was a superior competitor for nitrogen. I also did a litter bag study looking at the decomposition of Kogan grass biomass following treatment and found that Kogan grass, above ground and below ground tissues have a fairly high C to N ratio. So it decomposes quite slowly, and so the nitrogen that's in that biomass is mineralized quite slowly. So for both of those reasons, you would expect to see some effect of invasion and then some post-eradication effects, but we didn't see it. Here's total nitrogen here on the left. You see a little bit of a trend, but it wasn't statistically significant. Ammonium nitrogen, that was our primary form of available nitrogen in the soil solution. No effect of invasion or eradication on ammonium nitrogen. Here's nitrate nitrogen here on the bottom. It was a relatively minor constituent of total available nitrogen, but we did see an effect. There was no effect of invasion. It was nitrate nitrogen was quite low, both in our reference and our invaded sites. But then you see this spike in nitrate following eradication. 3 years following, you see the spike, and then it declines back to reference levels. The spike could be due to a number of reasons. One, we know that nitrification is inhibited at low pH, so that half-point increase in pH, maybe that's associated, maybe that's driving this increase in available nitrate. There's also very little plant cover in these sites following Kogan grass eradication, so there's any nitrate that's there is not getting taken up. Or it could be just a relic of the decomposition and mineralization of that Kogan grass biomass following treatment. We can really just speculate at this point. Soil phosphorus, we also saw some interesting trends. Potentially available phosphorus on the left and then actual available phosphorus on the right. No effect of invasion in either case. But in both cases, following eradication, you see this decline in phosphorus. And this is kind of an enigma to me. I did a litter bag study, like I said, and unlike nitrogen, which was tightly retained in that biomass following eradication, the phosphorus was liberated quite quickly. So within 3 to 6 months following Kogan grass eradication, most of the phosphorus in that biomass had been released back to the soil. But 3 years later, it appears to be gone. It's not, you don't see any apparent pulse in phosphorus. The only possible explanation I can come up with here is that, in the absence of most of your competing understory vegetation, I think maybe the overstory pines are sort of tapping into this newly available phosphorus pool. And I can tell you from sampling soils in these sites that 3 and 5, 7 years after Kogan grass eradication, there's just a tremendous amount of pine roots in those uppermost 10 to 15 centimeters of the soil that probably weren't there when there was a lot of native understory vegetation there. Getting into the performance of some native species, like I said, this is very preliminary. I'm looking at a number of different species, number of functional groups. This is wiregrass, which is Aristida stricta, and it's just above-ground biomass. I'm also going to look at below-ground biomass, root length, and mycorrhizal colonization. But as you can see, soils taken from those Kogan grass invaded sites, soils preconditioned by Kogan grass, no effect on above-ground biomass for wiregrass. But 3 years following eradication, you see a decline in wiregrass performance before rising back up to reference levels or even higher by 7 years. One possible reason for this, and something that I'm looking into, is just like our previous presenter was talking about arbuscular mycorrhizal fungi. One of his highly dependent species was an Aristida species, I believe. Well, we know this species as well is highly dependent on mycorrhizal fungi. I'm also looking at mycorrhizal fungi along that chronal sequence, so community assembly and also just inoculum potential. It's very likely that 3 years following eradication that there's just not the inoculum there that the wiregrass needs to perform like it should. Couple that with that decrease in available phosphorus, and maybe that explains why we're seeing these decreases in biomass. Hopefully I have some more answers on that before too long. So just to summarize, the effects of Kogan grass invasion on soil properties were modest at best. We really didn't see any significant effects. And much more substantial changes occurred and in some cases persisted for 3 to 7 years following eradication. More research is needed really to determine how these novel properties, both nutrients and also mycorrhizal fungi, affect the desirable native species. That's all I have, but I would like to acknowledge my funding agency, the Florida Exotic Pest Plant Council, and also the Florida Forest Service. So, any questions?
I just have a couple. Some of your data begged a couple of very obvious questions.
Sure.
Saw would suggest that maybe this could be a potential biofuel
Yeah, that's not something that I've looked into, but yeah, if you talk about 40 tons fresh weight per hectare, and it grows tremendously fast, that it does seem like it could be a good biofuel crop. Now, the differences in organic matter, we're actually relatively...